If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Thank you very much, Jim Gordon. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN on this Monday afternoon. Coming up a little bit later in the program, Lynn Hicks will be here from somewhere in Iowa. Lynn is the opinion editor for the Des Moines Register. You know, we started checking in with him almost a year ago, just from time to time to see how things were going in Iowa. And this is the big day. And then in a couple of days, no one will talk about Iowa again for probably 3 or 4 years. We'll see about that. But Lynn will be by a little bit later. Also, Elise Glink and John Byrne, you know, they're the co-hosts of Monday Morning Marketing on WGNplus.com. They'll come by and we'll kick around some news from Twitter and elsewhere. But right now, Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business is in the studio. Frank, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon.
All right. So, you know, Mayor Emanuel, and I'm a suburbanite right now, so I'm very sensitive to the mayor poaching the suburbs of their corporate headquarters, particularly Deerfield. I live in Deerfield, you know, where he took my Bulls.
Yeah.
You know, I had neighbors who worked for the Bulls, friends, and now they're downtown.
The practice facility, right?
The practice, right? So their presence is really gone. He made a play for Walgreens or others. I mean, Kraft is coming. And so Cranes has this really great story about the corporate headquarters and when they move. I think Chicago's got 34 now Fortune 500 headquarters in the city, but it doesn't maybe always mean all that much.
That's right. So there's a big story you can find at chicagobusiness.com. To your point, Rahm has lured 16 companies relocating their HQ to the city from the suburbs during his tenure, and then 17 additionally came from outside the metro area. So a grand total of 33 so far. But what does it add up to? So this big report looks at some of the trends that have made it so we have an incredible shrinking HQ scenario. So
right.
They're a lot smaller than they used to be.
So, you know, ADM comes from Decatur to Chicago. Wow, ADM, that's a giant company. That's going to mean big numbers. But the story says when ADM came here, 70 executives and white-collar workers came to Chicago, 4,200 still working in Decatur.
Yeah, and that's the trend. I mean, in addition to outsourcing, which is shrinking HQs overall, a lot of these companies that are moving will move a small number of jobs into Chicago, the executive suite, and then leave behind in their old HQ the bulk of the workforce.
I think someone referred to it as the executive headquarters, maybe more than just the company headquarters.
That's right. So right now you've got GE Healthcare, their executive leadership team of 200 from suburban London going to come to Chicago, but there are going to be about 800 employees left behind.
Okay, so what's the point of it? Is it a vanity address, or why does it happen?
Well, one of the reasons it happens is you have access to professional services in downtown Chicago that you don't have in a lot of places like Decatur, you know, attorneys, accountants, that kind of thing. So that's a big boon. There are also instances, for instance, where you need to have a neutral location. So when Boeing merged with McDonnell Douglas, Boeing was in Seattle, McDonnell Douglas was in St. Louis, so they chose Chicago as the new Boeing headquarters in 2001 as a way to have neutral ground.
And to be fair, the story points out too that there was a law firm in Seattle that did a lot of Boeing work. They opened up offices in Chicago. I think the number was maybe 180 lawyers or employees moved here too. So it's not always just the headquarter company.
Right. And then another reason why companies do this is, sometimes you want to shed some workforce, and moving the headquarters really makes you sharpen the pencils and say, look, we're going to take half the square footage. We're going to downsize the executive ranks. So make some hard decisions maybe a little bit easier to make in terms of reducing the overall headcount.
So they're cleaning out the basement and moving downtown.
Right.
Just like the retired couples.
That's right.
Frank Sennett's here. We got a couple minutes I want to kick around too. One of the big stories over the weekend was this agreement to build a new runway at O'Hare. The mayor worked out a plan with the airlines. That's good. He could use something in his favor these days. But then what I'm not clear about is everyone seems to agree that we need more gates.
Right.
And, you know, if you read the Tribune account, they say, yeah, he didn't get the gates. you read Crane's account, you know, Ginger Evans is saying, well, we're hoping to get the gates eventually.
It's a multi-step process is what I'm gathering from this. So we got the $1.3 billion deal up front to build the last of the proposed new runways under the O'Hare Modernization Program. And the reconfiguration that will result from that project finally being finished is going to allow for expansion of terminals 1, 2, and 3. So the airport has enough demand right now for another 2,100 linear feet of terminal, and that would be enough for several new gates. And all of the carriers want new gates, according to Evans. United, American, Spirit, and JetBlue, she says there's no question about it. But, you know, first the runway project has to be done, and then I guess that opens up the configuration to expand those terminals so you can walk even further.
You know, we were talking a little bit about it last week. I think maybe it was with Louis Lazar, I'm not sure. But, when you just walk around O'Hare, it needs to be a little more inviting. I know they've made some steps. I'm in the international terminal. It's nice enough, but it's not really nice.
That's true.
It's not LaGuardia, but it's not Hartsfield either.
Yeah, it's not or Orlando or some of those, you know, cushy airports. I do like they've upgraded the food offering significantly over the past decade or so, and I always like to go to, you know, the different Frontera.
That's true. It's a good point.
They definitely could jazz it up.
But if you want, you still can get a $10 hot dog that was cooked 6 days ago, right out of one of the carts. Yeah. Frank Senna from Crane Chicago Business. Thanks very much for coming by today.
Thank you.
It's 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, let's go to Iowa. Everyone else has. Lynn Hicks is the opinion and lead engagement editor of the Des Moines Register, and he's been our go-to guy when it comes to the Des Moines or the Iowa caucuses. He joins us on the phone line now. Lynn, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. How are you?
I feel kind of like we're saying goodbye, so we'll have to check in still from time to time.
I turned into a pumpkin about midnight tonight, don't forget about me.
We do think of that, though, because you've had so much attention, and everyone's been there, and, you know, tomorrow will be probably a mop-up day, and then on come Wednesday, I would imagine it's going to be like you're going to be looking around and saying, what happened to the party?
Yeah, well, you know, there's plenty of things to write about here, but, you know, the caucuses have kind of sucked all the air out of the room. So.
Well, at least you'll have some snow. You've got that to write about this week. All right, so let's talk about this because I'm just fascinated by it. You know, everyone's talking about the turnout and Bernie Sanders and the enthusiasm for Marco Rubio. I want to talk a little bit just about structure because the Republicans and Democrats do it a bit differently. 7 o'clock, you've got to be at your precinct. They close the doors. And then once they're inside, the Democrats, right, they're the ones who divide up by room. So your neighbor knows who you're supporting.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, on the Democratic side, you have to sort of go in a corner to who you're going to support. And then they'll, you know, take a head count, and then we'll figure out whether or not, you know, who's viable.
Right.
And so that's one of the big questions tonight is, let's say that O'Malley's folks. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you got to reach 15%, right, to be viable?
15%, right.
Okay.
And so in the districts that, or in the precincts that O'Malley is not, then his supporters have to make the decision: are they going to go? Will they go uncommitted? Would they go to? Or would they? You know, then the drama begins where Sanders and Clinton supporters start asking them to come over to their side, and so it's really hard. It looks like the polling is really ambiguous on this right now, but it appears that those O'Malley supporters are probably about split evenly.
Okay, and so then, Lynn, I'm reading something like there was talk that the Clinton people were going to try to make O'Malley viable in some spots, and I'm not sure I understand that.
Well, I think that's a calculus that's going on in every precinct, and I mean, in some places it may, you know, if O'Malley indeed is viable, does that, you know, make that way that Sanders stays low?
I see.
You know, so it's gonna. I think, you know, in some cases, the Obama folks in 2008 really understood these rules very well. Clinton was saying she didn't understand it then. She's you know, become more savvy. So I think the organization, everybody's trying to figure that out. I mean, there's 1,681 precincts in Iowa, so this will play out in each a little bit differently.
Okay, and so then we're viable. And let's say Bernie Sanders has 65% of the vote. Hillary Clinton has 35% in that one precinct. So, I mean, we're not going to end up with a raw vote total, right? Instead, we're going to learn about delegates. So would they, each precinct sort of split delegates, or how does that work?
Right, there's a certain amount of delegates in each location, and the reason that's important this year is that, you know, it's not just about Sanders getting out, getting people to the polls. It's also about where they go. So, in other words, you know, he's very strong in some of the college towns, and even though he carries that area, you know, if he's not also strong in other parts of the state, then he's going to, you know, that it's not just about the popular vote. It's about the delegate count, and you may not have enough delegates.
So if he crushes, absolutely crushes in the college towns, but doesn't fare nearly as well around the rest of the state, he could have the most people go to caucuses, but Hillary Clinton could leave with the most delegates.
I mean, hypothetically, that could happen. Yes.
You don't think it's likely.
You know, I mean, the thing is that everybody believes that Clinton's organization is superior and then she will get people out. There's still a question about the likelihood of Sanders supporters. And certainly he's done a great job. You know, people are turning out for the rallies. He's getting big crowds. And you got to believe that a lot of those will be motivated to come. But you know, we're going to have to wait and see.
We'll watch for that. We're just about out of time, Lynn Hicks. But tell me, the Republican side is a little bit more of a, you know, single vote sort of issue, right? It's more
right.
of a straight vote. And people are talking about the fact that maybe Cruz is faltering and Rubio is rising. Is that what you're picking up on?
Well, everyone believed that Rubio had momentum going. The problem that we saw in our poll, the Iowa poll, is that we did it over a four-day period. Mm-hmm. And ending on last Friday. And Rubio actually started trailing down toward the end of the poll, actually after his debate, which a lot of people thought he had a pretty good debate. But
right.
There were some questions about the immigration videos, for example. And so that really questioned some of the momentum. And you know, he got 15% in our poll. A lot of people were hoping that that he would get closer to 20. So it's not real clear about how his momentum. I think he's a second choice of a lot of people, and so he may. They're hoping that, and they're, of course, his campaign is downplaying expectations, and that's what the Iowa caucuses are all about: is how you beat expectations,
yeah, how you
so,
come out. Boy, you know,
right.
I'm sorry that we're out of time because I could talk to you about this forever. But man, just imagine if there was the viability issue in the Republicans with all these candidates, that could be quite a show. Lynn Hicks, you have been so helpful to me for the past year or so, and we're going to talk again from time to time just to check in on Iowa. And who would have thought, right? We met 7 or 8 years ago over a butter sculpture of Barack Obama at the Iowa State Fair.
That's right.
And here we are in 2016. It was great to talk to you again, friend, and I hope we can do it again soon.
All right. Take care, Steve.
You bet. Lynn Hicks is the opinion editor of the Des Moines Register and a great guy, too. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is Monday, and if it's Monday, that means the Monday Morning Marketing Podcast is up on WGNplus.com. The hosts of that, Elise Glink and John Byrne, are here, and we're just going to listen now as we play the podcast. Here we go. In 3, 2, no, maybe not.
Well, we could just sort of jump in.
If we play it really fast, we could get it all in.
Was it a good one today?
6 minutes.
Was it good?
It was good.
It is good. It's always good.
I was going to say, you're supposed to say it's always good.
It's always good. It's today we talked a little bit about reputation management, or how does the world see you online?
Well, that's a great question because, you know, I mean, you must advocate that people Google themselves, right?
Oh, we do. In fact, we were trying to decide on the podcast today exactly how often you should be Googling yourselves. I think minimum is once a month.
And if you're a millennial, once a day.
Right, or several times a day.
Right.
How often do you have your phone? 28 times a day you check email?
Something like that.
Yeah.
That assumes they actually look away from their phones.
Right.
Wait a minute. You You only check your phone 28 times a day for email? Really? I'm serious? I mean,
I think it's an average.
Well, I'm okay. Sitting in front of a computer monitor, so I think that downgrades my number.
Right, but I bet I'm around 100.
Are you?
Probably, just because it's in my hand and mm-hmm. I'm looking.
Yes, but the true question of how old you are is whether or not you sleep with your phone.
I do not. No, I do, that I've not done. All right, so online presence. I'll have a guest on and someone will text me like, oh, they've got a real interesting Yelp profile, or they've got this or they've got that. And that's the sort of thing. I mean, it can be very helpful, but it can be very damaging too. What can you do about it?
Well, you know, first you have to understand that it isn't just what's on Google or Bing or other search engines. You then have to go to all the social media platforms these days, because there are conversations that could be going on about you or your company on Twitter, on Pinterest, on Instagram, on Snapchat, on
LinkedIn.
Right. There are just all kinds of places where you could be having these conversations could be going on, and you want to stay on top of what people are saying about you, what companies are in it saying about you, who wants to interact with you, and then you want to do, if you can, control the message.
Sounds like a full-time job for someone.
Well, we talked about that on the podcast today. We said you may want to think about hiring somebody, because it has gotten to be a super complicated thing.
How do you find out? I mean, I can do the Google. When I Google someone else, not myself, you know, different Twitter mentions will come up. Facebook yeah. mentions will sometimes come up, but you're saying not all of them.
Well,
one of the things that you can do that a lot of people don't necessarily do is set up notifications on all the social media. So for whenever their company or for whenever their name or whatever is mentioned, mm-hmm. you'll get a ding on your phone or wherever that talks about, you know, something was just posted on Facebook or Twitter.
Right, which is really helpful. And you have to go to the individual social media platforms. Like for business, LinkedIn is really useful. So this morning we were doing some live as taped. So searching for my name in a various, you know, my name is hard to spell, right? I-L-Y-C-E is how I spell it, but commonly it's spelled E-L-I-S-E. And people will put in sort of wrong configurations of my name. And they're still looking for me. Google now knows that. And so even if your name can be spelled a bunch of different ways, when you search for information about yourself or your company, and you do it on all the social media platforms, like Twitter or LinkedIn, you really have to run through those different permutations. This morning, we were on the air taping, and I discovered that my mother has my mother's LinkedIn profile that I probably set up. And then there's somebody from India with her exact same name.
Really?
Yes.
Well, so, you know, and my first thought is, oh, we could be in trouble. We got to clean up this profile. But it's really not even that, is it? It's you just want to be aware. I mean, you could be missing opportunity if you don't know that you're involved in a conversation somewhere.
I think that's right. And the other thing is that you could be missing opportunity to get found on a Google search by not having profiles within those social media platforms. Because whenever you Google something or somebody, usually, you know, the first three or four hits are going to be things like Facebook and right. Twitter, as opposed to just your website if you're a business.
Okay, so I'm on LinkedIn and I'm not active on it at all.
Shame on you.
At all. I'm just not. And
you're hosting the Wintrust Business
Lunch. If I send you a friend request, would you link in with me?
I have hundreds of unacted upon friend requests
no,
on LinkedIn.
Really?
Hundreds. And so, but that's a bad thing, isn't it? I mean, because I just don't have an interest in it, but, you know.
So the expectation for companies and people in the business world is that you will be there, you will be able to be found there, and it'll be up to date.
I guess the question I'm getting to is that, you know, I'm there, but it's not active, it's not up to date. So by avoiding it, I could actually be doing myself harm.
Absolutely. Yep. And I think for companies as well, you know, the expectation that you're going to have a company profile, that you're going to have the individual profiles, that the blog on LinkedIn is going to be active, that you're going to be doing thought leadership stuff, that expectation has now been formed. So if you're not there, it's really a negative. Yeah.
So I work a lot with professionals like lawyers. And one of the things that they always say is exactly what you said. I don't have time. I just have a lot of requests, blah, blah.
Do I say it like that? Is that
yes,
sound,
exactly
John?
Like okay. that. But anyway, because it starts to sound like the same noise right. I hear from the people that I consult with.
From his clients.
You know what it is? It's like, I got to make the kids lunch. I got to drive. You know, it's like
right.
it's another one of those things.
It is.
Well, but the one thing that people don't realize LinkedIn especially is it's a self-updating phone book, basically. You don't have to keep updating your contacts necessarily and use LinkedIn as a way of saying, oh, I haven't talked to Bill in a year. I wonder if he's still at, you know, XYZ Corp.
Right.
So when I meet people now, and I went to an HR event Thursday morning, met, you know, 40 or 50 different people, I got a handful of business cards. The first thing I did was come back and connect with them all on LinkedIn. It's a great reminder of who you are, that where you met, and then you can start to explore each other and move on.
I was going to sign on to LinkedIn to see how many friend, but I really don't know my password.
I was going to say, you forgot your password.
It would take me some
password
time to
reset.
Do it.
Yeah. I like this sort of, you know, we do it live while we're on the air. Everybody feels engaged.
It's that multi-platform, multitasking that a lot of younger people do all the time.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to have to give them my best shot. Okay, we're out of time, but give me 30 seconds on what's going on with Twitter.
Twitter, people think it's up for sale. Stock price is up today. The market is, you know, crazy, so you can't even judge that. Even Jim Cramer thinks the market is all crazy. But Twitter is definitely in play, and it looks like something will happen with it. The big executives have left, and usually that means that somebody new is coming in.
As predicted, in fact, on this show back in December.
That's right.
I remember that well. I was watching on my LinkedIn at the time.
There you go.
We do have a crystal ball, and sometimes it works.
Nice. All right. That's Elise Glink, John Byrne, the hosts of Monday Morning Marketing at WGNplus.com. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Sure thing.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's 12:52 on this Monday afternoon. Yeah, we spend a lot of time on the program talking about new companies, startups, and things like that. And, well, I suppose in a way what's going on at the Mistwood Golf Course, the clubhouse, and McQuethy's Tavern and all in Romeoville is a bit of a startup, but maybe a restart. Jim McQuethy is in the studio now. He is the owner of the course. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
The owner of the course is like sort of like the chairman of the board, I guess. Tell me your story, because I know you worked for many, many years with Barry Baring and found yourself then in possession of a golf course.
It's a strange, strange history, and they tie together ultimately. I went to college.
You played college?
Played college golf, Division III. I wasn't very good, but that's beside the point
here. I went to college too, Jim. I didn't play at all, so you were pretty good.
Okay. But when I have a master's degree in economics, and I sort of had to prove it to myself that somebody would hire me and I could succeed. So I went out and worked, and I actually worked for one of the major banks in Chicago. I taught economics at Indiana University. But then when I proved to myself that I was a viable employee, I went to work for a family business, Barry Baring Company, which was founded by my grandfather in 1920. Very successful, very prosperous business.
Now, Jim, I grew up in Kankakee County and worked at the Eagle Supermarket, just about kitty corner from a Barry Baring Company right in Bradley.
That was one of our branches.
Is that
it was
right?
Pretty much typical storefront. An inventory, and committed to good customer service. And that's the driving factor that made Barry Baring successful. At the time we sold it in 1992, it was absolutely the dominant privately owned Baring business in the United States.
So you find yourself involved in a Mistwood golf course in Michigan. I'm just going to skip ahead here a little bit. And then Mistwood, this course in Romeoville. It's a 2002. You're invested in this course. Things aren't going very well, so you decide just to buy the whole damn thing.
That's right. There's a link between Barry Baring and Mistwood. The landlord of our corporate office for Barry Baring Company approached me in the early 1990s and asked if I'd like to join him in investing in a golf course. Well, that's sort of a life's dream, one that I never thought could possibly be fulfilled completely. I joined in as a 7% owner, and it was very exciting, but the course was struggling financially, and in 2003, I made a decision to try to take over the ownership of the course. I succeeded, and then, of course, the question is, okay, now I've got the course, now what do I do?
Right.
And right from the get-go, I'm a perfectionist, which is either a curse or a quality. Right out of the box, I didn't like this, I didn't like that. We redid number 16 green, redid some tee boxes, worked on the drainage and the irrigation, and the rest it becomes history.
And the big news this season, and I know there's going to be a grand opening in April, is for the new clubhouse, correct?
New clubhouse. Actually, the clubhouse was planned. We were going to build it about 4 or 5 years ago, and then our architect, Ray Hearn, reminded us that the number 3 green was too close to this new clubhouse, so we better change the hole. Well, we changed the hole. While we were talking about changing the hole, we just reversed our sequence completely and decided to do the renovation of the golf course before the clubhouse. So starting in about 2011, 2012, We closed the course for part of the season for a couple of years, did a masterful renovation of the course, and at the same time built a performance center, which is basically our range. It's in the top 50 ranges in the United States.
We've got 30 seconds left. You've done all of this. You've opened up the clubhouse, the learning center. You've redesigned the course. What is it that brings you the most joy out of what you're doing?
Seeing happy customers enjoying it. That's a wonderful question. That's the biggest. I can look at the physical structure. I can look at the course. But seeing the players enjoying it, seeing the diners enjoying it. We are a club rather than a course, and that means a lot. Something we changed right out of the box. The whole concept of club and excitement and enjoyment and taking the best possible care of our customers, or our guests, more correctly said, is the main thing that gives me satisfaction.
Jim McQuethy of Mistwood Golf Course in Romeoville, Illinois. The sun is shining. Spring's just around the corner. Thanks very much for coming
in. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.